Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. In this podcast, in response to a subscriber's inquiry to talk about, quote, what's going on in the economy, unquote, in podcast 490, we're going to talk about the economy a little bit. In a podcast I've entitled, Just Getting By. Well, you can see it everywhere. And that is, the trees are popping. People have allergies already because that's what happens in the spring in Minnesota. And it's going to get warm. And I think this year it's going to get warm really fast. We have a little joke, Ryan Plumbing and I, about global warming, which of course is seasonal change in Minneapolis and St. Paul, where we really have all four seasons. And when it gets hot, people in Minnesota want to turn on the AC. And that's one of the reasons to recommend Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, because they can do an AC check. And you should have it checked because it's a complicated system. Sometimes the box outside has to be cleaned. There's other issues to make it more efficient so you don't spend a lot of money with the AC on all summer, especially if this is going to be a warm summer, right? 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis. You can call 612-927-6771. That puts you in touch with Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They go metro-wide from St. Paul. That means they have a plumber near you. If you're in Plymouth, if you're in West St. Paul, if you are in St. Paul proper, or if you're in any of the suburbs or the suburbs of Minneapolis, wherever you are in the metro, they can get to you. For four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. So if you have a business, it's also important to remember Ryan Plumbing and Heating, and also remember them for emergency service on plumbing, AC, heating issues. Once again, in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. At ryanplumbing.com, and you can click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page, and it takes you right to their website if you need to. Great content there, and you can contact that way, or through the old school telephone lines. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Well, first of all, it's hard to believe that I've done 490 podcasts in a little less than 3 years with the Bob Davis Podcast. So that's pretty great. And there have been a lot of improvements and developments, not the least of which is Mobile Podcast Command, which I'm going to talk about a little bit in this podcast. But it's been a great day today. I had some pretty neat realizations. I was doing some business stuff, and I'm filing my taxes late, I hate to admit, but I am, and I had to do some tax work. And I had some conclusions. First of all, I realized that I had not thanked people who donated on New Year's Eve. I don't think I did, or I don't think I actually got around to all of the people in 2015, and there have been quite a few in 2016 that have donated to Mobile Podcast Command, and I want to do that now, because these contributions really made a big difference in 2015 when I was out on the road on these road trips, and I didn't realize it until I actually started adding up the business for the year. Now, this is not a nonprofit business. This is a for-profit business, but Mobile Podcast Command is not cheap, and running it isn't cheap, and so I asked people if they wanted to send money, and more than one person said, hey, I love the podcast, and I figure $100 after 3 years is worth it. And I'm not pitching for it. I just want to say thanks to people who have done it, because it has made a huge difference when I'm out on the road, because I can eat. And I realized I can eat, I can put coffee in the coffee machine, and I can keep diesel fuel in the truck. And when I went through all my PayPal transactions for 2015, I realized how draconian and how careful I was not to spend too much money and to husband that resource. So first of all, I'm going to thank my friend John from Tennessee, and he won't let me say his full name because he said that he will stop donating if I give his full name. So thank you, John, for $100. Sean Sarazen, who has been a great fan of the podcasts, gave me $200. Brent Severson, $75. This is back in December of 2015. see who else. I have to go look through all the minuses because those are the spending. John Bachland, who's been a sponsor of the podcast, has also donated. Thomas Johnson was another big donator. Chrissia Lundberg, and I know it's not Chrissia, it's her husband, but thank you. Andrew and Linda Siegel sent me $100, and I don't even think I know them, but I really, really appreciate you sending money. And John keeps sending money as well, which is great. James Schmidt, $20. And really, it doesn't matter. Chrissia sends me $5. See, it doesn't matter if it's $5 or $100 or whatever you want to send. It's appreciated because all it's used for is fuel and so forth. But again, I'm not pitching. I'm thanking. Lynn Sexton, Jeff Dunn, Austin Erickson. There's a lot of people that that donated recurringly, which I love. Margaret Martine. Some of these people bought the audiobook too, which I really appreciated. David Halstead, Mitch Rossin. That was actually me and Mitch the night that we put this thing up. So Mitch, you don't get a thank you other than thanks for doing it. Nick Conrad was another person that actually donated. Martha Gervanga, or I'm sorry, Gravagna. Oh, she's one of the people that bought the book, so I can't count that. Somebody from No Name LLC. I don't even know what that is, and I really appreciate that. If it's No Name Steaks, call me, because I would love to have you as a sponsor, because I love steak, right? It fits. Let's see, who else? Now, I'm going to skip all the people that bought the book. Greg Putrich, $50. Nick Ludwig, again, thank you. Greg hit me twice. Let's see. I'm reading through and I have to skip the book. So Seth Tollefson, $40. Lottie Stein. I mess your name up every time, Lottie. I know Lottie. I've known her for years. Steinke. Sorry about that. And if that's wrong, you can beat me next time you see me. Ed Nass donates all the time. And I really, really appreciate that. Let's see, I have to keep going through here to find these people. So I guess I'll be silent as we, maybe I'll put some music behind this or something. Thad Richardson sent me a great note in addition to donating. Randy Walker has always been there as well. Let's see, these are all the people, you know, Conyers, Georgia, and places where I spent money. But Greg Stamp, comments on Facebook, thank you so much for your donations. Andrew Vetch, Paul Beach. Let's see. And there's more of the Lundbergs there. You know, it's all over Paul Beach again. Like every page I see these people. Wayne Hintermeister. Really appreciate Wayne. He's donated more than once. Just trying to see if there's any, I'm going through these as quickly as I can. To just kind of, I don't want to bore people, but if you're listening for your name, it's not boring to you, but I want to make sure there's Jacqueline Babcock, $50. That was great. Julianne Olson, $100. Eric Haig, donates all the time. Greg Hayes. I got confused with Eric's name there. And, you know, it's funny because people will donate when they can, and then I don't see their name for another year, and they donate again, and it's really great. Bob Petty is another. Lori Hodges donated, and that was a big payment, $250. Thank you so much. John Spaulding. There are the Lundbergs again. Crazy. They're just all over the place on this thing. See, you go through all, you see all the minuses, which are the payments for Henry Tenenblatt. I think they live in LA and or California someplace. And thank you, Henry, and your wife for donating. Wendy Tolanen, who has also helped me with Facebook. I really appreciate it. There's Wayne again. Clayton Henderson, another $250 from Clayton, which was great. And this went right into the vehicle. This was all during the trip out east, and then on the campaign trail as well, right into the vehicle, you know, right into the diesel tank. Gerhard Schroeder, $1. Oh, that was the guy that was mad because I attacked the Tea Party and said, I was going to give you $100, but I'm going to give you $1. So Gerhard, you get a shout out just for your little dollar. Kelly Judson, $25. Michael Breck, I've seen him donate before. Shane Skelton, of course. John Forsman, $100. Michael Gombold, $100. Amy Olson, $50. Thanks, Amy, and your husband as well. Chris Broberg, I've known for years. Chris, I love you. You're awesome. Dan Auger, Russ Buchholz, $100. Michael Prinsing, $100. Thanks, Michael. And then again, the more repetition of people that have donated throughout this. Tom Marco, $50. Margaret, geez, I don't know how to say this. L-U-E-S-S-E, Lessie, I suppose that's how you say it. Jennifer Beacom, $100. That was great. Nick Conrad, and there's my friend John again, who also let me stay at his house. Bill Mowry, $50. I think it was $50. $25, sorry. James Decker, $10. And it goes on, you know. I mean, it's pretty cool. There's Randy again. I'm just looking through really quick as much as I can of 2016 as well, because I don't want to forget to thank people. Michael Pickett, $100. And some of these people I don't know. Some people I do. Others I don't have any idea who they are. They're just listeners. And thank you guys for doing that. Here's one from the North Star Greens, $10. I have no idea who that is. Jason Feipel, or F-E-I-P-E-L, Feppel, $25. I don't know Jason. Don't have any idea. Who are right above Shanghai Chinese Restaurant in Waukee, Iowa. That's the spending, $24 for some pho there. Sue Solomon, thank you, Sue. I see more than one payment from her. There's Bob Petty and Amy Olson again. Parts by Nate. Nate sends me money, $25. That was great. Jack Kelly, $10. And that's it. So those are the people that have donated to the Bob Davis Podcast Mobile Podcast Command. And we're going to be obviously asking for more donations going forward, because it's going to make all the difference. And we have more road trips scheduled for 2016. And I think, honestly, more travel podcasts, because of the darkness of the whole political world these days. So keep the contributions rolling in. And again, thank you. And I'm sorry it took so long to get to, but I hope that if you did donate, we got to your name. So thank you. So somebody, another listener, said recently on Facebook or somewhere, hey, I'd love to hear you talk about what's going on in the economy. So we're going to talk about what's going on in the economy in this podcast. I made some notes, but I'm pretty much going to talk off the top of my head. There definitely is political news, but it's all debates over how many delegates people have and will have and what's going to happen in the future. And it's starting to really get to me because, you know, I can't predict the future, and I hate going through it. And then I start predicting the future to try to give you some balance in terms of what's going on. So I'm going to leave that alone, although I will talk about politics a little bit in this podcast as it relates to the economy. But I'm going to start with where I start every day. And I don't start with political news every day. I don't start with the Drudge Report. I don't start with news aggregators every day. I start with market news. And I like to start with market news because it's when you're dealing with hard market information, it doesn't get much of a spin, especially when it's brand new. The spin comes later. After I do the market news, I go to the political news and then to the world news. And usually a lot of the world news has an economic tinge to it, especially in emerging markets, especially today, because the economy and the market stuff affect world news in a big way. So we're talking about China, we're talking about Russia, we're talking about Brazil, we're talking about Venezuela, we're talking about Nigeria and South Africa, we're talking about oil producers and smaller, quote-unquote, emerging countries, all struggling due to a decrease in demand for commodities and goods in the developed world, all struggling to a degree because of low or no inflation. We have slow economic growth in the United States and the European Union. And at the same time, we have high debt levels in the whole world. We have central banks injecting fiat currency into the banking system, which is electronically injecting money into the banking system. How do they do that? They loan money to banks at below 0% interest, basically. High corporate debt, although the Federal Reserve actually creates money, but that's going to take too long to explain. We also have high corporate debt. Companies have a lot of debt, high levels of corporate debt. It is as high in the U.S. as 2009. And some people feel that high corporate debt, particularly in the energy markets, could be as dangerous to the economy as the housing market. I don't know if I agree with that, because the housing market is pretty deep and wide, but it's something to be aware of. Employment has rebounded in the past you know, since 2008. And certainly the president can take credit for that, but it's lower quality jobs. And in some cases, people are working two or three of these lower quality jobs. So employment per se may look good, but it hasn't returned to levels prior to the 2008 banking crisis and the recession that follows. We're just getting by. And this is producing all kinds of speculation that is as crazy as the speculation about the presidential race. In fact, just getting by is a huge factor in the candidacies this year of Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, and to a lesser extent, Ted Cruz, as opposed to the garden variety establishment politicians that talk about marginal changes or small changes on the margins, same thing, on both sides. And I put both in quotes, on both sides of the so-called political divide. This is something the media likes to refer to as populism. Populism is what animates Sanders, Trump, and to a lesser extent, Cruz. Populism is supposed to be an advocacy of public policies that benefit the so-called little guy. But in reality, populism is really a political tactic. It was a party, but it is a political tactic that has been a theme in American politics going back to the beginning, and it developed in earnest in the late 1800s to address the concerns of small farmers and businessmen in rural America versus the so-called mercantile classes in the big cities, the big banks, the stockbrokers, you know, the industrialists. And populism itself has really little to do with our economic problems today. So you hear politicians using populist rhetoric and using populist political tactics, but the solutions that they propose really won't get at the itch that we feel that we need to scratch. So I'm going to give you some things to think about here. So, you know, one of the things you're going to hear me talking a lot about in this podcast is business. I'm getting, you know, I'm doing my taxes and everything. I'm late, but I'm getting it done. And I just had a great day of business stuff. And usually I don't want to do that stuff, but then I get into it and I start feeling great about it and I get all kinds of ideas in my head. Now, the first quarter, as far as I know, is usually when a lot of businesses, big and small, start figuring out we need to do some client appreciation. And it is always a big challenge for businesses, big and small, to figure out what to do to show clients how much you appreciate them. Of course, you can take them to lunch or dinner. You can go on a fishing trip if you've got a boat. You can send some kind of promotional item to people with your company name on it. You know, you can try something new too. And I have something to suggest that I think is great. And it really doesn't matter what kind of business you have, because you can get the wives involved or the husbands, depending on what you do. This is something different. It's social. It's memorable. You socialize and bond with your clients engaged in creating something unique. Now, they tell you in radio copywriting, you're supposed to get the client name at the very top of the copy, and I haven't done that. I'm sneaking it in, so here it is. This place is called Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. You can just walk in. You can also call them and book a session. You can do it in the daytime or the nighttime to show your clients how much you appreciate them. Brush Studio events are held in a relaxed and social setting. They are event planning ninjas. Here's what it is. Basically, you paint a picture. They have an artist there who's great, who guides the team through a featured painting step by step. And these are not artists. It's not about art. It's not about being an artist. You don't have to have experience. It's about having fun. It's about being creative. And the fact is, your clients are going to be amazed at what they're able to do and what they're able to create. People take these things home with them and show them to their friends. It's not about painting. It's about socializing and working together. So at Brush Studio in the West End, they have room for at least 55 people. Plus, they get catering from Crave in the West End, which is always good. And Brush Studio features over 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. The bottom line is, this is not the fishing trip or the lunch. It's a fun and sophisticated way to create new bonding experiences for your clients. And they're not going to forget it. And they're not going to forget you. They're going to love you for doing this. So here's what you do. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, or you can visit brushstudio.net or reach out to Brush Studio in the West End, 952-236-1700, 952-236-1700, Brush Studio. And if you check out that website, you can see what they do and see how it works. And everybody has a really good time. So check it out. Now, if you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, you want to talk about and talk to Alpha Systems. Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Now, their package is FAA approved. They want to get it into your plane now because it does save lives. If you click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information, it's going to take you to their page. And there's lots of stories on there about people who have had their lives saved because having a visual indicator of your angle of attack when you turn on final approach is critical, and it does work, and it does save lives, and people who have it love it. So click on those banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. And thanks, Alpha, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So I'm going to give you some things, as I said, to think about here. Without a doubt, technically speaking, the country has recovered from the recession economically. We have had, and some people don't understand this, we have had some level of GDP growth year over year for some time now versus GDP contraction, which is the textbook definition of recession. And I'm going to address the feeling that we're still in recession in a second, so don't freak out. We've also seen unemployment go down to pre-recession levels for the first time, but it has been going down for a while. Unemployment as measured differently than it was under Bush and Clinton. So the quality of that employment has changed. Low economic growth isn't recession, but it doesn't feel like dynamic growth because it isn't dynamic growth. And if you are of a certain age, really, if you were young enough to work during the Clinton era, forget Reagan, if you were young enough to be working during the Clinton era, you remember, you know, dynamic growth in the economy. It wasn't hard to find a job during that period of time, just as it wasn't hard to find a job in the last 4 or 5 years of the Reagan administration. But the quality of jobs turns out to be a big factor. They are not the full-time factory jobs with high pay and benefits, although those are out there. They are not the full-time white-collar jobs with benefits and advancement opportunities, although those are out there too. And I'll give you an example. When I was young, during the cellular telephone explosion and after the deregulation of the telecom industry, everybody I knew were getting jobs at Cellular One or at AT&T or at all these different spin-off companies, and they were advancing very quickly. Most of them were sales jobs, but there were all kinds of jobs. You don't see too much of that these days. There's certainly jobs, but companies don't seem to be hiring in a robust fashion and giving out the benefits and the salaries that they used to because they couldn't find people to fill those jobs at that time. Companies seem to be hiring cautiously. They are hiring part-time or they're hiring contract employees, and they don't pay benefits or the benefits aren't what they used to be. Now, at the same time, there is a revolution gathering momentum in our economy. You're starting to see signs of it. Obvious signs? Yes. For example, you've been using automated tellers and cashiers at gas stations and ATMs for 20 years, at least 30 years for some people. Now you're starting to see them in the grocery stores. You're seeing them in the fast food outlets, or if you don't, you will. You're seeing them in places like Home Depot. You will start seeing them in other places unexpectedly, like drugstores and pretty much all over the place. And at first, the electronic cashiers were difficult to use, but they're getting easier and more intuitive. And as an aside, some companies are trying to balance against that to try to figure out how to compete with higher levels of efficiency and lower costs associated with it. For example, everybody knows that Trader Joe's and Target does it too, although Target now has electronic cashiers. But people will talk to you about your purchase and they'll try to make you feel better and give you a human experience. But I'm finding the more I use the electronic cashiers, the more I would just rather go through and check my stuff out and move on. Because most of the time, you're buying for just one. You're buying a steak, you're buying some charcoal, you're buying some onions, and some cooking wine and some raisins and some chicken or something. And it's 6 or 7 or 8 items, and so you check them out yourself. And I really don't want to deal with the people. And it's funny because a friend of mine said that once, and I remember it was the first time I ever thought that. And then when I started using it, I realized, yeah, I don't necessarily want to deal with people. So I think one of the things that you're going to see is a complete replacement of people that do cashier work now at grocery stores and places like Home Depot and Target, and you're going to see it in 5 years or less. Now, there will still be people there to help people who can't use them, but they will be the norm at almost every retail location, including fast food, including clothing, including just about anywhere that you will go within 10 years, because the devices are getting better and better and better and easier to operate. I believe that in 20 years, the whole retail business will be maintained by autonomous machines, although there will be employees around to make sure they work right and to service them. But you may not be able to even tell the employees from the autonomous machines, because I don't know if you've seen any of the videos that show, and these are very primitive, but the humanoid robots who, if you really don't look too closely, you really can't tell. So that autonomous cashier may actually be replaced by a robot behind the counter who will check you out or help you check out, but they will be a machine as well. And you may not be able to tell the difference. And I think that's going to happen very quickly. And again, you've been using autonomous machines for 10 years and heavily using autonomous machines for the past 5 years on your phone. You've been using Google Maps. You've been using productivity tools for email. You've been using Fitbit. You've been using payment apps like My AT&T, for example. You're using autonomous machines to pay bills at your cable company and sometimes the power utility in other places. And some people, again, they don't know that. I never talk to people at Comcast. I always, because I hate talking to customer service at Comcast, I just use the autonomous software to pay my bill every month. So companies have been using autonomous software to increase their productivity over the last few years. So much, I think, there's a big debate right now in the economic community about productivity, so much that the standard methods of measuring productivity are in question, because clearly productivity's increased something like 42% over the last 20 years, while the U.S. population has increased by tens of millions. An increase in population should reduce reduce productivity, but our productivity has increased, and they can't seem to get it measured in the archaic 1950s tools that they use to measure these things in the general economy. So you're going to see the next few iterations of autonomous software and autonomous machines come very quickly over the next few years as the software and hardware gets more efficient and more powerful and more effective. Already they have robots that can move anything around. They can walk and they can move like humans. Those are going to get sold very quickly to all sorts of companies. They have robots that can be taught to do more complex work on assembly lines by simply you just grab their hands and show them how to do it, and then they can do it, and you refine it from there. Robots can now pack boxes, which is something they could not do just a few years ago, like 2-3 years ago. Robots can deal seamlessly with humans, which, by the way, you have been doing with ATMs and electronic cashiers now for years. And I'm saying that because there's so much resistance to this, but people have been using these machines for years. What's the difference between an ATM that you go to in a wall and a humanoid standing behind a counter that helps you and counts your money out? What's driving slower growth then in the world? So if we have all these wonderful things, why aren't we growing faster? Well, I think these are the building blocks of the new economy. And I haven't even mentioned materials and communications and flight technologies and all kinds of things like that. These are just, at this point, they're not industry, they're technology. And they're going to become industry if we can get the economy to actually move faster. So if we can grow dynamically, then you're going to start to see a very dynamic, vibrant economy emerge that is based on a lot of this new technology. And people are very afraid of it, so they keep trying to stop it. They keep trying to do whatever they can to stop it by trying to do things that used to work that don't work anymore as well. And so if you ask, well, why do we have slower growth? We have overcapacity throughout the world in manufacturing. Why? Well, because primarily in China, there was overinvestment by governments in manufacturing, in overbuilding. So they overbought steel and overbuy energy and everything else, and they've overbuilt. This is where we're talking about the empty cities, but it isn't just cities. It's bridges, it's highways, it's buildings in places like, you know, Pudong and Beijing, and housing and all sorts of things. Some say central banks, so the Federal Reserve, the Bank of Japan, the ECB, etc., are creating too much fiat currency. This is the injection of money into the banks in an effort to quote-unquote prime the pumps, the old Keynesian idea that you have to get people to consume, so you spend government money to get people to get try to get money out into the economy, give people jobs so then they can go buy consumer goods. Well, that's really an old way of looking at things, and there's a big debate about whether stimulating demand is actually the solution, because some people believe that you have to stimulate the supply. In other words, you have to cut taxes and spending. I'm getting very frustrated with supply-siders being described as people who want to only cut taxes, and we don't have anywhere to go. We can't cut taxes any further. Well, we can cut corporate taxes, and frankly, we ought to cut them to zero. You know, we can cut individual taxes throughout the progressive tax system by changing the system. I'm not saying I advocate these things, but there are all kinds of options for this. And we can certainly cut spending at the federal level, and we can return more to the individual to allow individuals to figure out how they want to spend their money and so forth. I think another reason that we have slow growth is there's a huge amount of money being diverted into insurance. I just noted that one of the largest growth areas for the economy was healthcare spending. So what does that tell you? It tells you that people coming into the system through Obamacare are paying, or the government is paying, for healthcare, and that doesn't do anything. That money is just insurance. It doesn't build anything. It doesn't buy anything. It doesn't create anything. It doesn't do anything about using any of these new technologies, materials, and energy, and things of that nature. It's kind of a dummy load in terms of the economy, I think. So they're not really stimulating supply. And we're not really returning money to the individual to allow a new economy to bloom based on whatever they would decide that they wanted to do with their money. And so the political effects of this are you are now seeing a pushback on wages. You are seeing a big pushback on the types of employment. There's a big a big debate about the so-called 1099 economy. You see riots and fights and political fights over Uber, which is the poster child for the 1099 economy. You are seeing articles about how terrible it is to work for companies today and who wants to do that. And these big tech companies are slave drivers and people are crying at their desks and everything else. Let me tell you something. In my time, I saw people throw chairs through walls or, you know, dent walls with chairs. I saw people clearing their desks back in the old days and the unquote tech economy. I saw an awful lot of demonstrations of frustration in New York City when I worked there. So, you know, this isn't limited to just, Silicon Valley and the horrible things that the slave drivers at those Silicon Valley companies do. If you think it's terrible to work for a Silicon Valley company, just think how terrible it is not to work. At the same time, there's all these articles about how terrible it is to work for yourself. And working for yourself is fantastic. Even if you don't make much money, working for yourself is fantastic. And I'm going to tell you why right now. I wasn't going to do this until the end, but I'm going to tell you right now. The reason is, when you go through and you do your profit and loss and you look at all the money that you spent versus the money you've taken and figure out where you're going to pay your taxes and how and whether you want to pay any tax at all and how you want to pay it, or if you have enough expenses, you don't pay that much and so forth, you come to the realization that 25 to 30% increase in revenue is a huge change in lifestyle if you're in a small business. And those of you who do anything, you know what I'm talking about. If you pour concrete, and I don't care if you're making $1 million or $100,000 or $30,000, if you can increase your revenues by 20 to 25%, it's a huge change in your lifestyle just because you have more money to spend in the business, you have more money to figure out how to build, and yet to increase revenue. And this is the name of the game in business. And it's really exciting when you realize, well, how do I do that? You know, well, I can do it this way. I can do it that way. It's up to me. If I want to get up tomorrow earlier than noon, you know, I'll probably get up at noon and go buy a cup of coffee and go to my tax appointment. Or I can get up at 8 and make some calls and try to generate some income, right? So it's entirely up to you. That's what's great about it, because you can work as hard as you want, and you can work not as hard as you want, depending on where you're at. So it's not terrible to work for yourself, and it certainly isn't terrible to be in the freelance 1099 economy. Certainly, some people don't make money, but on the other hand, some people do because they hustle. And if you hustle and you enjoy hustling, I'm not saying I'm one of the hustlers, by the way. I like to sit and watch Mad Men all day, too. But it's interesting because you see that and you see these articles about the spiritual crisis in the middle class that really focuses on the poor, not the middle class. You hear demands for, they want to tax data, your data mining, to pay for a minimum income for everyone. Vox just wrote a piece about figuring out how to fund Social Security to provide people with a minimum income and getting rid of 401ks and pension plans so that we don't have to worry about retirement anymore, which is just amazing. And you see it in the demands for higher minimum wages and immigration, because, and those two right there are mutually exclusive, because if you pay people wages that are too high, then companies are going to go try to hire people that will work for lower wages, because wage is a cost. It isn't a right. You don't have a right to a wage. You have the right to try to bring your wares to market. But if you can only do one thing, like push a broom, you're probably not going to get paid $15 an hour, right? Well, what all this is the birth pangs of a new economy. And it is an economy, but it's more than that. It's an industrial revolution. That is, it's a revolution in the way things are made. It's a revolution in the way things are delivered. It's a revolution in the way things are purchased, how they're paid for. It's an industrial revolution, similar to what happened in this country around 1900 and then again in 1950. And what is coming, this revolution, may be more upsetting, undermining, and disruptive than the previous industrial revolution that culminated in 1950 and kind of got going in 1900, but really started in the United States in 1830 and in Britain, thank you, Margaret Martin, in the late 1700s. No one is talking about this in the media right now. None of the politicians are talking about it because nobody wants to take up the question of how this is stimulated and how we can make it happen faster, because they don't know, because they are all trapped in old thinking. They're trapped in the Republican-Democrat paradigm. They're trapped in the up-down paradigm. They're trapped in the left-right paradigm. They're trapped in the communism-capitalism paradigm, when those tools, those words, that none of that makes any sense anymore. Certainly, communism is not a preferable system. You know, I'm not sure what people mean when they say capitalism, since Marx named it. So before Marx, capitalism was just the way things were done. All we talk about is what we will lose when automation and robotics and the whole thing takes hold, and you are some kind of crank or quirky tech nut like Ray Kurzweil, if you talk about what will be gained from this revolution. All people want to talk about is that 20 million jobs will be destroyed by 2029, but you can't envision the jobs that will be created in this, because you don't know, to use the words of the defense secretary, unfortunately, back in the day. In fact, I don't even remember his name, because you don't know what you don't know. And we don't know what kinds of jobs will be created, because no one's conceived of them yet, but they will be, especially if this thing gets going. So here are some thought starters for you to end the podcast. Companies are not going to be hiring workforces anymore. They will hire contract workers. Some are going to get paid a lot and some won't. It depends on what you know. It depends on who you know. Yes, it depends on who you know. And it depends on how well you do what you do. You know, I might be a talk show host, but I'm not the best talk show host in the world. So the guy who is the best talk show host in the world gets paid more money than I do, right? You will pay your own taxes and take care of your own health care. The companies won't do this anymore. They won't do, withholding will go away. People will have to figure out how to handle that themselves. And it's great, because you'll be able to keep your money until it's time to pay your taxes, instead of having to go through withholding if you do it right. You will probably work in a satellite office or at home. And so there's an opportunity right there because people will be able to build satellite offices or help people with their home offices. And for all kinds of things, not just people who do accounting work or work for, you know, financial firms or are consultants at home, all sorts of things will be done at home. There will be more moving around as people go where the work is, which means communities and relationships will be more temporary, which is what they're writing about now. But it's because people are moving to where the work is that communities and relationships have become more temporary. It's funny how just in terms of my world, which is yoga, how quickly teachers move from one place to the other. Well, Erin's going over northeast because she's going to be based over there. And, you know, John's going to be here and so-and-so is going to be over there. People are moving around all the time. So what happens is social media and smartphones and the other community tech is the community. It will be the community. Despite all of the anger and frustration with these kids on their cell phones, this is the community for almost everyone. And they're communicating with each other and they're making plans and they're saying, hey, I will teach your 4 o'clock, or yeah, I will take care of that for you. And here's some stuff I thought of, or here's an attachment that's going on when somebody is sitting on the white leather chair in the really nice yoga place with the fireplace, getting ready to do the power yoga class while she's sending out attachments and everything else to the other people in her work group who are also working in some other place. This is already happening now and has been happening now for a while. So this is a trend. It's great. People love it. They're able to be more creative and more productive. And are there problems associated with it? Yes. Is there frustrations? Do we get frustrated with social media? Yes. But there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. So here's the bottom line. If we make the wrong choices in this election because we have been engaged by the emotion of the old, you know, binaural thinking, for lack of a better term, or bilateral thinking, for lack of a better term, then the new economy and the new growth and the new world that is coming will happen more haphazardly and more slowly with worse results. We probably can't make the right choice in this election since even though we're in the early phases, the economic part of it has already been ruined. You can't have a reasonable conversation about the economy with anybody anymore because all they want to do is talk about the jobs that have been sent to China, which is not true, or how computers are taking over all the good jobs and people have nothing to do and all this stuff. The reality is that this new technology, and it isn't just the new technology, it's the whole situation with the world economy, whether you're talking about Brazil or you're talking about Venezuela, which is what the United States is going to look like if we elect Bernie Sanders or socialist, like, not quite as bad, but you never know. This kind of new world with Silicon Valley and Wall Street and Main Street thinking together is the kind of new thinking we have to have, not government intervention and statism where the state comes in and solves all the problems and hands you a minimum income and you don't have to worry about that. You know, we don't have the kind of new thinking that we need to have on economics. We don't have any new ideas in Washington, and we don't have any new ideas when you look at the, quote, powers that be, unquote. We see people that rehash stuff because it gets them elected, and it's easier to explain it to people who are living in fear, and they want someone to say a chicken in every pot or don't worry, we're going to fix this, which is what one candidate I saw on the campaign trail actually said, don't worry, we're going to handle that. We don't need to talk about that, which was something about Social Security. As far as problems, you know, and people that might get elected and how they would deal with them, well, that's, you know, that's a speculative, but we could see a major crisis in China, which could mean the end of a one-party system there, and it probably will mean a more regional federalist system in China, and it would be a revolution in China. I don't know if it will be violent, but I think if their economy, they say it's growing at 6.5%, it's probably growing at less than 3%. We're probably going to see a crisis in Latin America sooner than later, and we're talking Venezuela and Brazil. Venezuela is turning the lights off and telling people to take Friday off because they don't want to lose the electricity. Real problems there. Brazil, they're going to impeach the president, and the problems they're having probably aren't going to be fixed by an opposition party, again, that is interested in older ideas. We are already seeing a crisis in Europe with refugees rolling into Europe because they have a higher standard of living and because they have nowhere else to go. So the whole Eurozone is in trouble as NATO and the defense institutions and the economic institutions put in place at the end of World War II are struggling to accommodate the new thinking and new economy that is happening in spite of all this stuff. And I told you this was going to happen. I've said this for years. Things are going to happen in spite of the government. If we could paraphrase Eisenhower, who said, people want peace, and if governments don't give it to them, they're going to push them out of the way. This is the economic version of that. People are going to do this stuff. They're going to use... I saw a video about a drone that is a one-man drone that's basically fly-by-wire, and you don't need... you just need to know how to fly the drone, which you can learn on a simulator, and you can fly this thing. People... And these are fantastic new things that you see on YouTube, but people are going to see these things. They're going to want to use them and figure them out, and they are possible. And because they are possible, this thing is going to be approved by the FAA and will be flying next year. You know... people are going to want it. They're going to be interested in it, and they're going to want to buy it. And governments are going to have to get out of the way to make that possible. You can't just stand in the way of these things and say, no, we can't have driverless cars. No, we can't have, you know, individual flight. No, we can't have this, and no, we can't. We've got to build cities the way that they were built in 1900 instead of 2015. So those are the kinds of crises and flashpoints that you see. A good example is the United Kingdom wants out of the Eurozone, and the president of the United States, who should have nothing to do with it, is freaking out because he's worried about what's going to happen to the EU if the UK pulls out, because the United Kingdom is one of the largest economies in the UK. You also have Norway, which is a huge energy producer that wants out of it as well. I just read tonight that Russia is spending their sovereign wealth fund fast because of the decline in prices in energy. So Russia could have a crisis. Same is true with China. China has been selling bonds. And it's so funny because people say, China is selling our debt, see? But really, that's not good for China, because they're selling our debt perhaps at a loss, or they're selling their debt because they have to. And, you know, then you look into what's going on with the Middle East and the oil producing countries like Saudi Arabia, you know, with the price of oil down largely because of their efforts, they could have social problems. They could have potentially some real serious problems there, you know, and in some of those other countries because of the lower price of oil. Iran is another example. And this is what is producing the friction in that region that is producing civil war and everything else. It's not the only cause, but it's partially a cause. We're just getting by. They are slipping further and further behind the rest of the world, because I'm going to tell you, nobody is going to go build their one-man drone factory in Iraq. They're going to build it in Michigan, or they're going to build it in Tennessee, or they're going to build it in Norway, or they're going to build it in Germany, where they don't have to worry about that stuff. So the Middle East is falling quickly behind, and it's clear that the rest of the world can produce as much energy almost as it needs, whether it's solar power or oil, right? So these countries that haven't diversified and haven't been paying attention to economy issues and haven't been doing right by their people by helping their economies grow, but instead have been pushing a certain point of view of religion or a tribal system of law or whatever, they're going to fall behind and they're going to starve. And that's going to be I believe that's going to start happening within 10 years. You're going to start seeing mass starvation in certain parts of the world where they just haven't got it together, and they're not going to get it together. Meanwhile, in places like this country, if we make the right choices, we are going to turbo ahead. And I'm going to sound like Trump, like you've never seen before. So that part of the Trump message really is something that could come true if the right things are done. So finally, what we're talking about is looking at spending, taxation, deficits, and debt overall, and not just national debt, but corporate debt, become an issue economically in 2016 and 2017 and perhaps more. We're seeing a lot of corporate defaults. You know, one that's near and dear to my heart, and it isn't a default, but iHeartRadio, you know, was the company I used to work for, and iHeartRadio purchased all these radio stations, and they borrowed, $26 billion, and they are in big trouble. They cannot pay it, and they are consistently trying to reschedule their debt. There's a lot of companies like iHeart that they went out and borrowed money because it was cheap. And you see this argument all the time with infrastructure. People say, you know, the government should spend money on infrastructure because money's cheap. You know, since money is cheap, in other words, interest rates are low, we should go out and buy up every radio station in the country, or we should go out and buy up all the steel mills, or we should go out and buy all our competition, you know, grocery stores or department stores. And they end up being crushed by the debt because they can't run the company properly when they don't have any cash flow and they don't have any profit margins. Now, your company may be in the same situation. My company isn't, because my company is me, and I am able to spend only what I need to spend. And if I spend too much, I cut back. I don't have debt. And that is the way I do business. But some companies use debt to try to expand. But if you get caught by not being able to expand, or your service starts to lag and people stop buying your product, you're in big trouble. You know, the radio companies got hit at just the right time by movement from radio. This is another technical disruption to iTunes and to YouTube and to, you know, podcasts and things like that at just the time that they borrowed all this money. So it's not always a good thing to borrow money. You have to know what you're doing, and you have to know why you're doing it, and you have to have a business that can withstand that kind of debt. And companies and countries are having a huge problem with debt right now because they believed that nonsense, that money's cheap, so we should build bullet trains. If nobody wants bullet trains, you're just throwing the money away. And the jobs created are in such a tiny swath of the economy that it really doesn't, quote unquote, stimulate the economy. What stimulates the economy is letting people keep their money and spend it the way they want, and letting it, and this is the essence of market economics, watching how they spend it and seeing where the opportunities develop. So that's my thing on the economy. It is much better to be in business for yourself. I had some great realizations today, which I mentioned, and I would recommend it to anyone. And I think we are going to see an economy that is based on a 1099 sort of experience, where people are sole proprietorships or S-corps, who are in business for themselves with just them or their wife and their wife or their kid. They don't have too many employees. They're providing a service. And if you can make it work, if you can survive, it is an incredible experience to be able to get up every day and say, well, I've been in business for this much time, and I guess it's, I can pay the rent. So let's move on and see what we can come up and to do today that's going to be great. That's what it is. It's not building a giant multinational corporation that goes public. It's building a business that you can build your life on. And to me, an economy that makes that possible is a wonderful thing. Getting there is going to be hard because there's a lot of resistance and fear to the tools that bring us there. But I say, what do we have to do to get there? Let's figure out, let's make a list, and let's start doing those things. Well, I've been talking about Hydrus for a long time, Hydrus. And I've talked about practicing yoga, and I've talked about all sorts of exercise. My mom is using it. My friends in Dallas are using it. Because it doesn't matter if you walk. My mom is 93 and she goes to the gym, and she's going to start using Hydrus to see if her if Hydrus can help her diabetes issues and help her with dehydration. Anyway, I was going to go into this whole thing about how I got into it, because I do yoga in really hot rooms, and you get sore if you get dehydrated. And I thought it went with the territory until I found Hydrus, Hydrus. I can do a sculpt, and I wake up the next day, and I feel great. I feel ready to go do another one. And Hydrus has transformed my yoga practice. You've got athletes in CrossFit using it. You've got wrestlers. You've got tennis players, basketball players. It doesn't matter whether you cycle, do CrossFit, lift, or do competitive sports. Hydrus makes a huge difference. What is it? It's a high-performance beverage that uses exclusive nanosome technology to get critical electrolytes into your muscles with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. There's no sugar in it, unlike traditional sports drinks, which are loaded with sugar. Hydrus will help you take it to the edge, and it doesn't matter what you do. So here's the deal. If you want to know more, join the performance hydration revolution. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's Hydrus, HydrusPerformance.com. HydrusPerformance.com. Lots of info on there about what Hydrus is and how it works. And thanks again for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. Thanks once again to Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. If you want to do a great client appreciation party, check out Brush Studio. You can click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, or you can just check out brushstudio.net and they can help you out. 952-236-1700, 952-236-1700, Brush Studio in the West End. Don't forget, as it gets warm, you're going to want to turn the AC on. Does it work? Wouldn't you like to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating come over and check it out, make sure everything's in working order? 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too. For four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, and emergency service, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Once again, thanks to everyone for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com. I want to thank everybody for donating to Mobile Podcast Command. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show on the Patriot in Minneapolis and St. Paul at 4 p.m. on Saturdays. That is super cool. And thank you for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, which is my favorite social media, BDavis7843 on Instagram. And again, thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command and at thebobdavispodcast.com. This one has been an extra extended, super long podcast. My first one-hour podcast, I think. So thanks for listening.